What constitutes racial justice following a scourge like slavery? The slave-owning political philosophers and anti-colonial rebels back in the 1700s were not ignorant of the idea of blacks and whites living together. There were places all over the Enlightenment world where such was the case. Even the very international city of New Orleans, right here in the United States, in its early days was the most cosmopolitan place in America, multiracial and free. But as America's government emerged and the difficult economic compromises and contradictions of ending slavery became clear, America's great early leaders envisioned a way, tragically flawed way, that blacks and whites, and even Indians, Native Americans, would live together equally.
When I say that these enlightened, I call them liberal because that's the way they used to describe themselves, liberal Americans believed in the equality, the kind of potential inequality of people of color. They believed in their potential to become like white people or actually become white.
Actually become white. That's historian Nicholas Guyot, who says that because America did not have a realistic vision of a diverse nation of different peoples, it invented separate but equal, the tragic doctrine responsible for so much death and misery in America. Separate but equal was invented by Americans long ago. His new book, Bind Us Apart, How Enlightened Americans Invented Racial Segregation, shows how a well-meaning theory in America led to such a bitter end that we're still dealing with today.
One thing which a lot of folks now who feel like they are, I mean, particularly white people who feel like they're having trouble getting a handle on the race issue, one of the things they feel is that, you know, for the past 200, 250 years, the United States has been on this kind of journey. And it's a journey that's made the principles of the Declaration of Independence more expansive. And I think the problem with this journey narrative is it overlooks the fact that there are some really difficult work in terms of managing integration, managing coexistence that dates right the way back to the first days of the Republic.
And the way you describe it, segregation becomes a mechanism for dealing with this, where are people going to live? And I don't think people had necessarily an idea of what the consequences would be, but it was their invention. Is invention the right word?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I would say that segregation became a solution for high-minded, the word I use in the book is enlightened white Americans. So I'm talking here about many of the founding fathers who styled themselves as children of the Enlightenment, you know, who believed in, they believed in abstract human equality, or at least they told each other they did, that segregation eventually became for them a kind of way of managing the racial diversity of the new United States. You know, I would say the majority of the founding fathers recognized that, in theory at least, slavery was wrong. Similarly, in terms of Native Americans. So what you have here is a kind of self-styled, enlightened class of leaders thinking about how they can manage the 25% roughly of the American population that was not white, and in effect move that population into a place where it could be part of the American Republic, a fundamental part of it. And the problems they have in doing that, I mean, there are many, there are legion, and I write about them in the book, but segregation becomes in the end these enlightened American solution to the problem. I mean, you know, in short, it's can we persuade Native Americans or black people to move somewhere else? And maybe set up something like the United States somewhere else even, but get away from us. So achieve equality through separation.
But do you think that if you could have waved a wand and suddenly African Americans as slaves were just as educated as the Jeffersons and Ben Franklins of the world and Native Americans the same way, would the landowners in the United States in the South and North have gone, okay, let's all get together?
Well, it's funny you say that because, I mean, bound up in the premise of your question is actually a premise that these founders had themselves. When I say that these enlightened, I call them liberal because that's the way they used to describe themselves, liberal Americans believed in the equality, the kind of potential inequality of people of color. They believed in their potential to become like white people or actually become white in some cases. So you had all sorts of race theorists, the Princeton president, Samuel Stanhope Smith, who believed that people of color would literally become white, their skin color, their facial features would actually change if they were placed in the proximity of white people and they did the same kinds of jobs. So not field labor, but they began to do the same kinds of things that people like Thomas Jefferson did. So in a sense, what you see is this idea of equality, which is rooted in the notion that actually it's all about being white. So one of the kind of tragicomic elements of this is that it becomes clear after 1800 that people of color, even those who've been sent like some sons of Indian chiefs to Princeton, Princeton, they aren't becoming white. Or African Americans who've moved to Philadelphia or who were born in New York or Boston aren't becoming white. So then, of course, you have this attendant problem, which is if they're not going to become white, then what will be the future of them living in equality with white people, which is where you get anxieties about racial mixing.
So what do you think explains the dreadful carnage that comes as a result of Reconstruction and the Jim Crow period, or the genocide that took place in California and the Pacific Northwest as really the manifest destiny took hold?
We tend conventionally to think about this battle against slavery ending in the Civil War as a kind of regionalizing the problem of race in American history. So we tend to see the Northerners, Northern whites, as being mostly the good guys who got rid of slavery, and Southerners as the people who benefited from it and kind of entrenched it. Well, actually, this idea of segregation was Northern or national, dated all the way back to the beginning of the American Republic, and it was liberal rather than conservative. And I would argue that one of the reasons for Reconstruction's failure is that very large numbers of white people in the North had never imagined that white people would have to integrate with people of color in the same space. And that kind of deep-rooted inheritance of segregationist thinking has this Northern edge to it, rather than just being something that one can blame Southern whites for.
Does this history get us off the hook?
Yeah, I mean, look, I'm from Britain. I'm the pastiest white man you could ever meet. But they are that there has always been a problem here of adjusting, shall we say, of trying to make recompense, which involves a surrender of white privilege. And certainly for early white Americans, so, you know, the leaders of the Republic during its first few decades, in a sense, they talked the talk, but they never walked the walk, because the price of surrendering white privilege was too high. I mean, in the end, it was absolutely unaffordable for them, because actually, you know, the profitability of slavery became enormous during the cotton period. So in a sense, the way to solve this problem is now, as it always was then, firstly, to recognize that people of color have a crucial role to play. You have a lot to learn from them in terms of thinking about what equality means. And the second is you need to accommodate yourself to the surrender of privilege. And I mean, for people
so genius. That is, Americans need to articulate what white privilege is and how it is a piece in this negotiation for living together.
I think that's incredibly hard for people that don't feel very privileged. And I mean, again, it's about listening to others, right? I mean, it's not very much recompense to hear some elite white professor telling you that you need to surrender your privilege when you don't feel like you have very much. But in some respects, as a historian, one of the biggest jobs you can play is actually articulating the relationships in terms of power and understanding between these racial groups at this formative moment in the history of the United States. And I think you see the story much more clearly, at least I hope, from the angle I've tried to tell it from.
Nicholas Guyatt is the author of Bind Us Apart, How Enlightened Americans Invented Racial Segregation. Thank you so much.
Thank you, John.
You come to the New Yorker Radio Hour for conversations that go deeper with people you really want to hear from, whether it's Bruce Springsteen or Questlove or Olivia Rodrigo, Liz Cheney, or the godfather of artificial intelligence, Geoffrey Hinton, or some of my extraordinarily well-informed colleagues at The New Yorker. So join us every week on The New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.